Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for May 20th. It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a rainy Sunday evening is Jim Allen. What's going on, man?
I'm staying dry, man. How about you?
I'm trying, but I had to go outside. You know, I had to do husbandly things, take out the trash, you know, stuff like that.
Wow, John husbandry. Well, tell C she's got a tough job ahead of her, that one.
That's all right. She knows how to crack the whip.
Okay, whip it good, babe. All right.
All right, on today's show, we've got an interview with Jose Lopez of the Yomiuri Giants, and we're going to discuss Interleague and collisions at home plate and a whole bunch more, so let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, remember, if you live in the United States, find out more information about watching live Giants games on One World Sports by visiting their homepage. So, on Wednesday, I went out and talked to Jose Lopez. He's a first-year import with the Yomiuri Giants. He's only 29.
Wow. That's hard to believe.
I know. He kind of looks a little bit older. He has a
baby face, but he looks, you know, he's big, and he looks big to be. He used to be a second baseman, third baseman, middle infielder.
Yep.
And I have trouble picturing him in that role just because he's so stocky.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out why the Giants decided they were going to play him at first base.
And
I think they think they can put anybody, any one of their, the usual suspects they have out there at second base and get that kind of production. But they put him at second base. Who are they going to play at first?
Well, I think they're trying to break out of their curse of having a different foreign second baseman every year and having him fail. Because they've been doing this for about, I'm going to say, 6 years.
Yeah.
And one guy they brought back twice, who was Edgar Gonzalez.
Yeah. Now, Jose has played more games in the majors than he has in the minors, so that's an interesting player you bring over here to Japan, you know, from the United States. And he's got some decent numbers in the States. And Wayne Grassig, when I was out there the other day, he said a lot of the people around the team and some of the reporters think that Jose reminds them a lot of A-Rod. You know, because of his facial features and his mannerisms and a little bit with the swing. And, I mean, I could see a little bit with the swing, just a little bit. And the way he wears his socks up high and everything. But, you know, that's a big, that's a tall order.
Well, I wear my socks kind of like A-Rod, so.
Well, you'll be mistaken as soon as I'm mistaken for you.
Well, we do look alike, but we are not twins.
Yeah, so this guy's got, he's got like 1,000 hits in the majors. He's got 92 home runs. And he's played adequate defense at first base, but I think he had a friend who has been out there for the week, a friend named Omer, and he told me that Jose's best position is actually second base, not third, not first.
Well, that's what he played. That's what he was a regular with the Mariners at second base. So.
Right. So, I don't know. You look at his production and you look at guys like Hector Luna and you try to figure out what it is about some of these players that makes them more successful than other first-year import guys. We're only 6-7 weeks into the season, so I'm not going to say that he's a great pickup for them, but he's starting out great.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't say what he's going to be, but based on what he's done, you know, he's not a failure. He has a chance to be very successful,
which is
more than you can say for guys who have left Japan by this stage of the season.
Gabe Kapler comes to mind.
Yep. Sure.
Great
sure.
player. Yeah, just didn't work here. All right,
sure.
So now Jose's English is okay.
Yeah, sure.
So some parts might be hard to catch, and a couple times he wasn't exactly sure what I was asking, so I asked again, but he did a great job. He sounds great. Let's take a listen to the interview.
So how did you end up playing in Japan?
It's a really good one. I get here, I got scared first time. I don't know nobody here. But soon I get here, like, go to Miyazaki. I know this guy, great team, great teammates, great organization.
How did you end up joining the Giants?
I got a couple teams in the United States, but he don't guarantee nothing. He don't give me a chance to play in the big league. And I know I waited for team Giants and the other team here in Japan, a team in Rakuten, and I'm still waiting for that two team and make a good choice.
Yeah.
Go to the Giants, and I feel great right now here.
Yeah, I think it was a good choice, and you're playing well. Now, You're from Venezuela now. Did you talk to any other Venezuelan players about playing in Japan and how it was going to be before you came?
I talked to Alex Cabrera before in Venezuela, during Venezuela. I talked to Luis Jimenez, he played here for a little bit. I talked to Alex Ramirez, Ramichan, December 27th. And I talked to him. I give a sample to I know the league here. I know we play Japanese guy, like make it like a clean baseball, and that's a keep in mind.
Now, who gives you advice still now?
I don't know. I say Ramichan. Ramichan give like a lot of information from this guy, this pitching, and like you say, I keep in mind. I don't want to talk to nobody.
I bet, I'm sure. Now, you had a lot of success so far. I mean, everybody's impressed with you. What has been the key to your success so far?
Now, when I'm playing my winter ball in Venezuela, I play all games, and I want to play like hard, like I play in the big league, and the Giants stopped me on December 26th and December 23rd. He don't let me play anymore. And I go home, I still work out, and keep my mind fresh when I get to Japan, and that's what I did. Go to Miyazaki spring training, working hard, and like you said, I got a couple videos from everybody, every pitcher in the house, and I watch every day like 15, 20 minutes.
Every day?
Yeah.
15, 20 minutes?
Yeah. Depend we face that team that day. Mm-hmm. Like, before I came to the stadium, I watched like 15, 20 minutes a day.
On one pitcher or all the pitchers?
All the pitchers. But we got a video here for the start. But I checked the really big guys at home.
Now, you've... still probably getting used to Japan, right? Everything, all the experience is new. What are you working to improve in your game while you're in Japan here?
I'm trying to learn more of the pitches. I know you throw a lot of breaking pitch, a lot of four. I try to learn every at bat, every pitch, every situation in the game. I know it's a little different from the United States. It's the same baseball, but it's a little different in the field. But nothing bothers me. I feel good on the field.
Yeah, you look good. You look good playing. Like I said, everybody's really impressed now. You've hit some home runs, and you've hit some extra base hits on some difficult pitches, like some high and tight, some low. How do you describe yourself as a hitter?
And every time, you know, I go to home plate, I keep in my mind free, go to home plate, have a plan before I go there, and looking for one pitch, and I don't try to miss. Sometimes I never looking for try homers, home runs, so that, you know, I got 10 home runs right now, but I don't look at I like looking for doubles, bring the guy in the middle and third, second base, and if that home run happen, I take it.
So are you more of a line drive hitter? Or
double guy.
Double guy.
Yeah. Like that. I got line drives, but most of the time I got a lot of doubles.
Now you played in Seattle with Hall of Fame bound Ichiro Suzuki.
Yes.
What was it like playing with him?
I like it. He's a good guy, a quiet guy, but a different language. And I like watching play Ichiro. I saw in 2004 when regular Bahe. That's amazing. It's unbelievable when I got like three, four hit a day. It's 262. It's that many.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable when I watch Ichiro like play. Like he can get like five hit in infield.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. I got a great experience with Ichiro. I left Seattle like 2011, and we talked for a little bit.
Just watching him. Did you watch the way he played, and then you try to do some? I mean, you know, his swing is different, right?
Yeah, I keep the same guy like playing a big league.
Yeah, but for you, did you change your swing a little bit?
No, same swing.
Same swing? All right. Now, the Giants are a really good team, very famous team. So when you came here, what kind of pressure did you feel?
Pressure? No, I never got pressure. I only got pressure when I got first day in the big league. But here, you know, I try to do my best, like you said. I try to play my game happy, like playing and win the ball in Seattle a couple years ago, and keep it fresh.
Now, what about Interleague? I know you learned all these guys. You're making a face here. You learned all the Central League guys, and now you're playing these guys you don't know. What's your opinion of the Interleague?
You know, it's hard for me right now, you know. This is the first time I play here in Japan, and first Interleague for me. I don't know anybody in the other league, and it's kind of tough, but I'm be all right. I'm trying to watch a video, like, here in the field, like, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and keep him on my way to.
What about the schedule? Because you play two games against a guy, and then you have a day off sometimes, and then you play two games.
You know, for me, it's kind of tough, too, but before, I like to play, like, every day in a big league, like, take, like, 1 or 2 days a month off, but Ronaldo, it's kind of hard, but we got practice once in a we have to do something like 6 days a week. That's good for me.
That's good. All right. And the last question now. Expectation. Everyone expects a Giants championship. How do you feel about the team?
Team's good. You know, we got trouble for a couple of last couple of weeks. We're doing good. We're doing good. Like I don't want to say like get a championship right now, but it's a long way to go. But we need to fight and make a playoff first and try go to the championship and get it.
What are the other teams that look pretty good in the Central League?
Hushin Tigers with you right now. We play 3 times. We face the same pitches every time.
You guys have trouble scoring against those guys.
Yeah, we got Nomi and the other guy. It's kind of tough. But we'll be all right. Like it's a long season. We'll be all right with that guys.
Okay. All right. Good luck. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, Jose. And, keep up the good work, man.
Yeah, look good. Look forward to seeing you out at Tokyo Dome next time.
All right. So a few things caught my ear there, but what stood out for you?
I think his propensity for study, you know, is a big thing.
Mm.
You know, there's lots of things that can go wrong, but he studies, he's prepared. Your best chance to succeed is if you prepare as well as you can to execute. I mean, execute, you know, some people can say, well, you can prepare, but execution's another thing. But if you don't prepare, it's awfully hard to execute. It's hard to do what you intend to do if you don't know what you intend to do.
So what exactly do you mean?
Well,
I got you, man. I hear you.
Okay.
I mean, you go back to the discussion we had on the first year of the show, which is having a plan is better than having no plan, because at least you know where to start to make your changes and
exactly.
Where to make adjustments. And I understand that. Yeah, I'm with you.
Right. He sounds really focused on his approach, and that's I can't say it's the biggest thing. You know, it depends on the player. But certainly that's his way of doing it. He's not just, it's not just see the ball hit the ball. He's looking, he knows what pitch he's looking for, and he has a plan, as he said. Now, the one thing is English, and I'm not trying to make fun of Jose's English, because mine doesn't stand too much close inspection. But, you know, he says, like, you know, he looks for a pitch, and then I don't try to miss. And when he said that, I know he means I try not to miss.
Right.
But it reminded me of the strangest batting drill I've ever seen. Okay, I'm up at Kawasaki Stadium one day on an off day, just looking for a story.
Mm-hmm. This is years ago, right?
This was about 2 years ago. And actually, I was going to do a story on Daisuke Fujimura, and who's just come up, and he's hitting like crazy, which he didn't do in the minors. And Tatsunori Hara, the Giants manager, is giving him BP with the intention of missing the ball. And Hara came out and, he gave it this sort of mock pseudo-scientific rationale for why he wanted Fujimura to miss the ball in practice, and it had something to do with hitting the ball on the ground, hitting the top of the ball and hitting it to the ground and using his speed. But I left the practice shaking my head. I shook my head when I wrote the story, and every time I think about it, I shake my head. So when I heard Lopez say he doesn't try to miss, that means he probably hasn't done BP with Hara.
You know, I'm thinking as you're telling that story, you know, I'm sure that I could go out there and I don't know, maybe earn some extra cash or something, because I can miss the ball every time. I don't have to practice that.
Wow. It's called swinging for dollars.
Yeah, maybe, you know, I could show the other guys how to on the team, maybe as a part-timer or something. I could show the guys how good I am at missing the ball, and they'll be green with envy.
No, that'll be lack of oxygen from laughing so hard.
Well, I like that Jose watches a lot of video at home, he said. I was impressed with the fact that he does it at home. And I think that that's why you can see he's successful right now. That it's no accident that he's hitting the way he is. And I also love that he said, you know, there's no pressure. He's not feeling any pressure. He said the first day in the big leagues was pressure. This is not that it's a cakewalk, and I don't think he meant it that, you know, it's easier. I just think that in the big leagues, there's a lot of pressure to win no matter where you are. There's the same pressure here, but he's got a lot more help. This team probably that he's on now could compete against the Cleveland Indians team that he was on probably.
Could be. I don't want to try to explain what he said. I'll just have to take him for his, you know, what his words at face value.
Right.
I don't want to read too much into it.
All right. I also like the fact that he said that nothing bothers me on the field.
Mm.
And, you know, it might bother him a little playing so much first base. Because I don't really, you know, he got shifted over there, and I'm watching him at first. And, again, his friend Omer said anybody can play first. And I'm not sure about that. I think, you know, it takes a lot of footwork. It takes, I mean, anybody can learn to play it.
Yeah, any trained professional athlete could learn to play first base. And the only people who say, talk about how difficult first base is are former first basemen.
Well, you know, like I said, they could always turn to Michihiro Ogasawara.
You can't even
say that with a straight face.
You can turn if he's still there, and he's not back on the farm. So you have to look, because they'll have to turn quickly.
Actually, the day I was there on Wednesday, I think he was unofficially brought up that day, and then I think he was activated either Thursday or Friday. I don't remember, but I don't really think that's an option at first base. I get the idea he's pretty close to... I wouldn't say a casket, but he's certainly close to
it.
He's out the door, man. He's done. I mean, and I don't know. I mean, he lost it quick. He lost it fast. And he had a really bad at bat last night in Saturday's game when he came up to pinch hit. He just did not look good at all. Yeah, he's still got the great swing, but he's not making contact. He's not coming.
You know, it's almost bizarre how he went from a two-time MVP to a guy who looks like, you know, he couldn't play in a pickup league.
Maybe he looks like a guy who's been doing that drill where he misses the ball when he swings.
Harris protege. Well, he used to swing and miss a lot, but when he hit it, the thing really flew. That was his tour de force was the big swings.
Yep. So now I also like the fact that Jose talked to Alex Cabrera. Now it kind of had me laughing because I'm like, no, don't talk to Alex Cabrera talk to him about hitting. Don't talk to him about defense.
don't take your cues from him at playing at first. I'll tell you. You know, and kidding aside, Alex Cabrera is a tremendous athlete and with a cannon for an arm, and he can really play first base when he's healthy and motivated. But the place he's normally motivated is in the batter's box.
Yep.
You know, he just loves to hit, and the light turns on, and it really doesn't matter to him too much what the game situation is or whatever. But anyway, so yeah, as far as hitting and things he's going to see in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of pitches and so on, Alex is in terms of what he sees, I think he knows as much as anybody.
I think he's a terrific resource in that respect. Yeah,
but as far as, you know, in what to do with the pitches, I think Alex Ramirez is probably, there's probably nobody better than he is. You know, in this situation, you know, speaking of situations,
right?
I don't think anybody breaks those down as diligently as Alex Ramirez does.
Yeah, and I tease about Alex Cabrera, but you remember Frank Rampin, who was a coach under Bobby Valentine with the Lotte Marines, said about Alex, he said he doesn't grab everything in his area with the balls that come to him, and he doesn't have to go too far. He converts them all into outs, and he wasn't surprised that year that Alex won that Golden Glove, or a Gold Glove, I should say. But Jose looks really good in the field. He's not grabbing every single ball, but he's doing more than adequate work at first base, and I think he's doing fine. But, you know, I found it odd, and I made sure to make the comment when I asked him about Interleague, and he makes this scrunchy face, and he's shaking his head, and he doesn't like it. And remember when we talked to Matt Clark for the last show, he didn't like it either. He said, you know, I've been studying all these guys, to get used to the one league, and now we're going to be playing against the other, another league. And so Matt Clark hits two home runs in the first week of interleague play, and Jose sure. is doing fine too. And sure. the one thing that both of them have in common, and another player I spoke to, was the schedule. That was the thing, is they didn't want all these days off. They want to play every day.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's, Jose also talked about, you know, wanting to get out there as much as possible and play. Mm. And that the schedule was a bigger issue than the issue of playing against guys they didn't know. I mean, that's the thing. I guess next time we interview a foreign player, maybe even a Japanese player, do you really want to play these same teams all the time? Is it better to play all these guys you know? Do you just want to play guys you know, or do you want to play the game? Because we want to see, as fans, I mean, at least I do. I was thinking, look at all these Tigers fans out at Seibu Dome today. This is great. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it was full. It was about 50-50. I was surprised there were that many Lions fans. But, yeah, it was about 50-50. It was a good crowd.
So, yeah, that's what I like. And I want us to keep tabs, too, and watch the attendance and see if it's, you know, any different from last year or past years.
Well, I know players who really like the Interleague. But I think they're probably all exclusively Pacific League guys who, you know, are used to, who've got their frequent flyer, you know, they pretty much welcome to the Pacific League. Here's your gold frequent flyer card. So, essentially guys are going like, this thing with wings, where are all the wheels on this Shinkansen?
Yeah. So yeah, let's get into the interleague play now. Yeah, obviously the travel is different for these Central League teams, but the thing that upsets me when I hear them say, you know, we want to play the guys we know, I guess what it is possibly is that they get so much data and so many stats and all these numbers and all the, and they finally, when they study these guys and they finally get used to what's going on, then they have to get another stack of paper. And maybe it's just the homework that they don't like.
I'll tell you, I think that's a very interesting thing for the foreign players is that aspect is that there's more overkill for
right.
a short number of time. Okay, I'll say I mention this every time interleague rolls around. You know, what Trey Hillman said is how much the lack of familiarity really bugs a lot of Japanese players. And I wonder if it doesn't bug the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically Japanese coaches are there to tell the players everything they already know. And then add a few other things, add data and observations. But, you know, they're there to feed them information, some of the coaches, and, oh, here's more information, or, you know, here's more information, but it's less meaningful because it's on a smaller sample size and blah, 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 blah. There's, I don't know, organizational paralysis that has to do with playing people you don't know. It's just something they don't do.
Well, it's so odd because there isn't that much to study, and it's not like they don't have time to see the other teams every day. You know, there are lots of resources out there to get information, and sometimes I talk to these players, and they're like, well, you know, I don't see much of the other league. And I'm like, well, all you got to do is look over your shoulder. It's not like you have to go to the library, and there's just one library nationwide, and you have to make time to go to it or something. I mean, you know.
Well, I think they're focused enough. I think everyone is focused enough on what they're doing at their game and the guys who are coming up next. That's probably it's just the way they go about their business. And of course they have the coaches and they have the advanced scouts and that's there. But I think just this whole thing that interleague is something, you know, these are guys maybe it's a thing of a lot of the Japanese guys. These are people we can't possibly be prepared as well as we are against the other guys.
Mm.
You know, there's that one and my other one, which is the travel. You know, I asked Marty Brown, or one of the Yomiuri Shimbun reporters asked me in 2010, asked Brown Kantoku, what's the biggest difference for the Senate between the Central League and the Pacific League? He says, the schedule, the travel. It wasn't, you know, this guy's got this stuff and this guy can really pick it and the ballparks are like this. It's the travel.
Yeah, I mean, obviously before you play the game, you've got to get to the park, so.
And the series are shorter. The interleague series are all two games of pop. There is a move right now. I think the Central League wants to go from a 24 game schedule to an 18 game schedule.
Yeah, what is that?
Well, I think that's going to be a alternate home and away thing.
That's that doesn't even make sense.
Three games at one park.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it makes as much sense as anything else, but I mean, this is baseball. It's not supposed to make sense.
I suppose.
You run the bases this way and not the other way. I mean, who makes this stuff up?
Oh gosh, I don't know who makes it up. But let's talk about some of the all-time leaders in interleague play. Now, I know you didn't have this list and you didn't have a lot of time to go through it, but yeah, I saw this printed in the paper the other day, and I thought it'd be interesting to talk about. The all-time hit leader in interleague play is Alex Ramirez.
Right.
And he's got 266 hits. This is before Tuesday's first game in interleague. So
let's think about that. 10%, more than 10% of his career hits.
Yeah. Yeah. And the next guy on the list is Norichika Aoki, who's not playing here. He hasn't played here in a year plus. And he's at 246.
It's not that surprising that 10% of his hits are in interleague, considering interleague play is about a sixth of the season. So I guess not. It used to be even more. It used to be the first interleague season was 32 games. It was three away and three at home and three away. So that was a big chunk of the year. So anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So these are big numbers. And I think the thing here is to remember that this is 2013. This is the ninth year of interleague.
Yeah.
Is time flying that fast, or am I getting old that faster? What's going on here?
That's what I wanted to. I was thinking that I was getting old faster than you were, even.
Oh, come on, Einstein. That's not the way relativity works.
Okay, good. I'm so glad.
Yeah, I think once you start getting older than me, then your age starts accelerating closer to the speed of light.
The time continuum. Yeah. All right, so let's look at the all-time home run leader. That's Okawari-kun from the Cebu Lions, Takeya Nakamura. Now, he hasn't played much in the past season. He's at 51 home runs, and right behind him is, oh, look, it's Alex Ramirez.
Yeah, this is getting a little repetitive, don't you think?
Yeah.
Wait, who leads in RBIs?
Yeah, he's the RBI leader with 180. And the next guy on the list, Tomoaki Kanemoto of the Hanshin Tigers, at 135, and he doesn't play anymore. And behind him, Nakamura, again, Okawari-kun of Cebu Lions with 129. Murata, Shuichi Murata, who spent most of his interleague life with the Yokohama Bay Stars and is now with the Yomiuri Giants. And, he hit a home run the other night. He's upping his numbers in that category. I remember, he hit his 47th, and I know he passed Alex Ramirez, actually, in the home run race, and he's second all time, so I know that for a fact. I remember tweeting that out when it happened. But still, they're pretty close, and Ramirez is going to get a chance to be the DH in some of these games at the Pacific League Park, so he's going to get more playing time, so maybe he'll get a hold of one somewhere. I don't know that the home run park, they don't think the parks are so much home run friendly in the Pacific League, though.
Indeed, that is the case. So, I guess, Osaka Dome, Kyocera Dome's a pretty good park, and that's about it.
Yeah, and that's about it. And he didn't hit one today, so, let's see. And then batting average, the leader is in the United States at the moment, Norichika Aoki. 338 is his all-time batting average in interleague play. And then second on the list is Tsuyoshi Nishioka, who's returned.
He has returned, actually.
Returned
saw him play
from the
today.
United States, yeah.
Gave me kind of a wave when he came off the field, and I'm going, okay, hi there.
you're thinking, I respect you, and your work ethic is so much to admire. That's what you were thinking, right?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. He was taking grounders at second base, and he was, you catch the ball, and he was practicing flipping them to shortstop behind his back. That was his pregame practice.
Right. See, and I knew you admired that because you brought.
I did. I was thinking.
And you're talking about.
Wow, he's really preparing because who else in Japan? He's probably the best prepared second baseman in Japan, because who else is practicing that?
All right. In terms of pitchers, now I found this really interesting because the guys on the pitching list, the top guys, pretty much all lost their first interleague starts. Tsuyoshi Wada, who's with the Baltimore Orioles and is going to pitch one day. I remember saying he was going to be the steal of the recruiting class out of Japan before last season started, and I don't think he's thrown a pitch in the major leagues yet, or if he has, it was an injured one. Anyway,
the steal are the pins in his shoulder, I think.
Anyway, he's got 22 wins, and then Toshiya Sugiuchi, who has some wins with the Giants, obviously after joining them last year, has 22, but he lost the other day. Hideaki Wakuya of the Lions, he threw today
he
on
lost
Sunday.
Today.
He got gray matter beaten out of his head.
Wow, today this has been a bad list. Okay, let's move on down the list.
Tetsuya Utsumi of the Giants.
Thanks for playing.
He got beaten on Sunday. Loser. Masahiro Tanaka won the other day, I believe.
He did indeed. So he's
at 18 now. He's tied with Utsumi. And then
Yoshihisa Naruse.
Naruse. But the Marines gave up how many home runs? I think I hit one the other day, Alfred.
Three. You know, you were too busy swinging and missing.
Oh, that's right. Because I'm really good at that.
That's right. Keep on doing it if you're good at it. Don't quit.
So, yeah, I all these guys are battling because this really has a chance to change this year, and somebody could jump up and, you know, move ahead of Wada, who's no longer pitching in Japan. So, Sugiuchi obviously has the best chance, and he lost already. So it'll be an interesting race to see if he can move up on the list there.
How about saves?
Saves, this is not even a category. It's all dominated, and I think the other guys in the, on the list have to, it's like Monopoly. They have to, if they hang around too long, they're gonna have to end up paying Iwase a couple saves or something. I don't know. Hitoki Iwase of the Chunichi Dragons has 62 saves as of Tuesday, and I think he got a few. I think he got one at least in one of the first four games, because they won the first four games of Interleague. I think he got at least one, so he might have 62. But this is as of Monday. He had 62 going into Interleague play. Mark Kroon was next on the list. He is retired, but he only has 40. And then Mahara over in, where is he now? With the Oryx Blue Wave. Don't say Blue Wave. The Oryx Buffaloes. And we don't even know when he's going to pitch again. You heard anything about him? I haven't even seen him.
He was going to be the steal of the century, and then he pitched a couple times in the spring, and I think he even pitched once in the season, and that was it.
Yeah. He's got 38 saves, and we don't know when he's going to get another one. Next on the list is Kyuji Fujikawa, who's with the Chicago Cubs, and he's got 34. So Mark Kroon at 40 is the closest, and then other guys are barely halfway to Iwase, so I don't really see anybody in the near future moving past it. But the interesting thing on this list is that most of the guys are no longer throwing.
Yeah. So basically it's going to have to be one of these young guys coming up or something, but not this year.
Yeah.
Not for the foreseeable future.
Obviously. And then quickly, strikeout leader is Sugiuchi by more almost 100.
Wow.
He's got before Tuesday, he had 342. And then Yu Darvish, ERA 1.67, and the next closest guy is Masahiro Tanaka of the Eagles. So interesting numbers with these guys. I don't see a lot of it changing, but it is, you know, we'll go through it again at the end of Interleague play and see how it got going. But it was a great start. I really like Interleague. I love it. I like seeing matchups. I'm sorry. I don't care what the players say. I don't care what the teams say. And I hope they don't shorten the schedule. I hope the Central League stops whining. Why do they whine like this? There's no reason to ask why, right? There's never an answer.
They're always unhappy the fact that they hate it that the Pacific League is smarter than they are.
Yeah, that's going to stop sometime soon.
No, not really.
Now, who was your pick to win Interleague? I've forgotten yours.
I wish I had forgotten. It was the Hawks. They won good today.
They won today. Hey, yeah, you got to get one. You got to start somewhere.
Indeed.
All right. So, and the Marines, they're having a so-so start as well. So it's not, you know, it's nothing special. But the Dragons started out well, which was good for them. They usually don't play very well at all in Interleague, and nice to see that they had a good start, but of course they lost on the road. I don't see that stopping soon. I think they're a bad road team. But anyway, the Carp, when they beat, they won their first four games as well. Is that correct? No, they won their first three games.
First three and lost the finale against the Oryx Buffaloes.
In that three-game winning streak to start out in Interleague, they broke a seven-game skid to SoftBank. So wow. Things are looking up for them. I like the way they're playing. They didn't do very well today, but... You know, there are days like that, so I hope they do well. I'll be rooting for them.
Okay.
Got a little
that'll be of enormous moral support to them.
All right. Well, let's talk about your Yakult Swallows quickly and talk about the fact that if you put on the tools of ignorance, you might as well be in a cast, almost full body.
Well, as I said, you know, what do we know about you can find Jingu Stadium by the queue of ambulances waiting for waiting for pickups.
Wait a minute. Did you say queue? Man.
Cab rank?
Give me your American man card. Just hand it over the internet.
What would you call it?
A line.
Okay,
yeah.
They were queuing up. What can I say? Anyway, there's a line of ambulances. Of course, the ambulances were in the wrong place. These ambulances needed to be in Matsuyama in Ehime Prefecture, where the Yakult Swallows were hosting the Hanshin Tigers
last weekend. Yeah,
sure. And basically, the catcher's number three catcher.
Yeah.
This is a guy they got after the start of the season in a trade with Lotte. They swapped catchers, which I don't understand because I like both of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
But they swapped catchers. I'm going to say Masahiko Tanaka of Lotte went to Yakult for Kawamoto. And anyway, they traded him, and basically the Swallows' number one catcher is Ryoji Aikawa, and he had his shoulder separated in a home plate collision by Tony Blanco, and he's going to be out for another month or so. Kawamoto Ryohei,
yeah.
Okay, is the number two catcher. He's been getting a few dings and dongs or whatever it is catchers get. And then Masahiko Tanaka was in there in the game the other day against the Hanshin Tigers, and it's hard to say he's blocking the plate. He's basically preparing to tag the runner because you can see home plate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you watch the video, you can see home plate, and Tanaka is basically squatting towards the first base side. He's on the plate on the first base side of the home base, and Matt Merton basically opts not to step on home plate, but to run over the catcher.
Well, okay, all right. Settle down. Matt was going to be out. He knew the throw was going to beat him. He knew the catcher was set up.
He already had the ball. It wasn't like the throw was going to beat him. The guy had the ball before he...
I'm setting it up for the people who haven't seen the play. And he knew that the ball was going to arrive, and he knew that his only recourse was to either jar it loose or jar the catcher loose from the ball. and he tried. Now, and I agree with you. I think Tanaka did give him a corner of the plate. And had it been a Japanese guy, I think the Japanese player would have taken the corner of the plate and been satisfied with it. However, these big foreign players, that's not the way they think. That's not the way they're brought up. That's not the way they learn the game, especially when the ball is going to be there first. So I don't know what to do about it. I'm not a fan. I think, you know, we did have a catcher who... Kohei Oda of the Chunichi Dragons on Saturday had a tremendous block. He stood there as if the ball wasn't coming, and then he kind of straddled the plate a little bit, and then he dropped his left leg with the shin guards on it, and he dropped it down and kept Ginji Akamine of the Eagles from touching plate, and then he tagged him out, and it was perfect. It was beautiful.
Of course, and that's illegal, so that's another story.
That's the story that I want to get to is,
right.
Basically, and I think you copied the rule, which I knew already. No one is allowed to block the plate without the ball.
Right, right.
And it's not enforced.
Right. There's two things going on here. And basically, one is they have to enforce the rules. Two, this is what really gets me about baseball more than any other sport. And I guess we've talked about it before. Baseball will say, we'll watch these horrible collisions about once a year, twice a year. You know, some catchers can get hurt in the U.S. or the majors. I mean, really hurt about once a year. And, you know, it's not the end of the world. And the reason it's not the end of the world mm-hmm. is because people say it's a part of the game. Like they discovered it, among the laws of physics. Oh, that's how they act.
Well, the catcher is an immovable object. It cannot be moved from that location.
Exactly. It's the logic that's immovable here, or the lack of logic that's immovable. You know, it's a part of the game. And I absolve players. You know, you can't blame Matt Mertens, and you can't blame whoever the guy was who ran into Buster Posey. For doing what they do. Now, I don't agree with that play, mm-hmm. but the fact is everybody is telling them this is the way to play the game. Now, as a fan, and this has nothing to do with the fact that, you know, I support both of the teams we're talking about, the San Francisco Giants and the Swallows. It has nothing to do with that, but I don't like to see players get hurt. I would say it's a fairly routine injury. You know, catchers and runners get hurt in these collisions on a routine basis. Right. Why do people watch it and then say, well, it's part of the game? You know, it's like, okay, well, why don't they just hand the catchers a pistol, you know, or some kind of
weapon. Yeah.
Yeah. Beat them on the head randomly. And when they get injured, well, it wasn't his day today, but that's part of the game. This is something they could change the rules, you know?
Yeah.
There's no rule against a guy sliding into third base and giving the third baseman an elbow to knock the ball out of his glove. There's
right.
no rule against that.
Right.
But I wonder how long that would go because it's not the current practice. Right. If the guy's coming into second base or third base and levels the infielder with a forearm, people would be outraged. But at home plate, that's the norm. It has nothing to do with, to me, there's no difference.
That's a great point.
And I don't care, you're scoring or whatever, but that's the way they play the game. And they're so obstinate about changing that to say, let's have fewer home plate collisions or, you know, some rule. They need to clean that up. And
yeah.
Anyway, so that's my take on it. The Swallows are saying, boy, we could do something about this. And yeah. In America, what they do, and Bruce Bochy, and a lot of managers, especially if you've got a star catcher, you say, hey, if you're not 100% certain you can take this guy, you know, you can beat him into the dust, you can get him to be injured. Then don't block the plate. Give away the run.
Yeah, I heard management, upper management told the Giants to actually, they changed their policy and said, hey, look, we don't want our catchers blocking the plate. Kurt Suzuki was told the same thing with the Oakland A's. And I think when he went to the Washington Nationals, they told him something similar. And I think a lot of people are just changing their overall policy. But here's my question is, let's say, okay, the umpires are supposed to enforce this rule, which was rule 7. What was it again?
06, I think.
And what would be the punishment if the umpire judges?
Then
7.06. Then the runner is safe automatically.
Sure.
So let's get the umpires. Let's train the umpires to make the calls, and then people will stop blocking the plate, and then we won't have these unnecessary injuries.
Here's the difference.
Perhaps.
Here's the difference. Uh-huh. Yeah. Here's the difference. Is in the Swallows game, he had the ball. He was there, like, let's say a runner is sliding to third base, and the third baseman has the ball waiting to tag him. That was analogous to the situation in the Swallows-Tigers games, except in the way baseball is played, the runner at home plate is allowed to knock the catcher over and try to dislodge the ball because that's the way the game is played.
Right.
They're not allowed to do that at first base, at second base, or third base. So, well, first base, there's no tag play, so, usually. But, so to me, that's the odd thing is, now, yes, one is you shouldn't let the catcher, one, you shouldn't let the catcher block the plate without the ball, because that's illegal. Two, then you need a rule for how do you treat guys, now I've seen, who was it? Was it A-Rod who tried to knock the ball, slap the ball out of a fielder's hand after
at
he
first
was?
Base, yeah, at first base in a playoff game right. Or a World Series game, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they said, you're out. But how is that different from trying to dislodge the ball from the catcher?
Yeah, he's upright. I don't know. I don't know. You know, in the scenario that you're pointing out where obviously Matt Merton was going to be out, he had no other recourse. You know, I've seen so many Japanese players in that situation just stop. And they come to a complete stop, and they allow themselves to be tagged out, whereas foreign players never play the game that way. So, you say that it's part of the game and blah, 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 and I say that they don't know any other way, and the catcher still has to give them something to aim for. I don't say that because that situation is when the catcher doesn't have the ball. In the case catcher has the ball,
He can be all over the plate.
I guess you just make yourself a ball on top of home plate and wait for the guy to come and crush you. I don't know what you do.
No, I think the rule is this. Basically, you treat home plate like every other base. And, you know, you slide, you jump over the guy, you do whatever you have to do. But if you're trying to dislodge the ball, if you go out of your way to dislodge the ball, okay, and this is odd. An odd way of putting it, but basically, how's this? You know, you give the guy a part of the plate. You know, you're not allowed to. Third baseman don't. Here's another thing. Third baseman don't camp in front of third base with the ball waiting for the guy to slide into him.
Okay.
You know, they stand at the bag, and when the guy comes in, you tag him, and the guy gets tagged out and says, "Okay, we'll see you tonight for dinner."
All right.
But home plate is different, and this is the thing. It's people don't. People do get hurt sliding to third base. You know, I saw a player got hurt sliding into second base because he slid badly. You know, this is going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
But these big, monstrous collisions don't add anything to the game. They only take players out of the game, which is the opposite. You know, we want to get the best players in the game.
So
we should do, you know, not you and I. That would be interesting. But baseball certainly needs to get off its butt and do something.
Yeah. Okay. All right, a couple of quick notes. The Yokohama Bay Stars manager, Kiyoshi Nakahata, was ejected again. Second time this year, he went out and had a little bit of ump bump on Shinji Hashimoto, number 40 in your programs, ladies and gentlemen. I like it. I still like it. The thing I didn't like about it was it looked too deliberate. I like the passion. I like the fight. I like the feistiness. I like the Hoshino-istic kind of action out there, but it wasn't necessary. All he had to do is get, you know, what I really want to see is one of those good old fashioned slobber swapping, turn your cap around, face to face arguments. That'd be better than what he did. Hello? And did I lose you?
Yeah.
Slobber swapping?
I've lost on the value of that, but.
I mean, because you're defending your player. I mean, in essence, he was going out there to defend his player because he didn't want to, obviously, he thought his player was safe. He didn't want his player to get thrown out. Because he needs him on the field. God knows they need every player.
Well, the player was.
But they need their players anyway. And just making a good old-fashioned argument would have sufficed. And he could go back to the dugout. His player feels real good about things, about how the manager's defending him. Everybody's fine, and you keep playing the game. I don't know.
That part I understand. But you got to have some control.
Mm.
And Kiyoshi doesn't have. Kiyoshi's not big on control.
Nope. He gets too high, he gets too low. But hey, that's who he is. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, our friend Claudio from Toronto, a friend of the podcast, sent in a question. Now, he actually wrote on the Facebook, and I'm just going to get to the question that he really wanted to ask because he saw something bizarre. He mentioned something bizarre about a situation from a Robert Whiting book, but we all knew about it. So he says, what's the weirdest play you have seen in an MPB game? And I have to say the other one the other day that occurred between the Marines and Giants seemed to just rob my entire memory bank of all the other goofy plays because it was so weird. One was the 9-3 ground out that Seth Greisinger hit into in the first game, I think it was. He hits a ball to the outfield and gets thrown out at first base. That was kind of weird. I know you said it happens once a season or twice a season.
I'd have to look it up, but you see it now and then. I've been doing the season data on every at bat, and this happens now and then. It happens now and it's not every year, but I'll say I have the every at bat since 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's probably two or three of those in the database. Mm. So it's not every year. It's maybe every other year.
All right. Well, that's kind of a softball play, which I've actually seen on the softball field. And I almost pulled one off myself, but the girl was a little bit too fast. But anyway. Anyway.
I'm not touching that one with a 10-foot pole.
I think the play that that really got me was the botched rundown on which there was only
Isn't
one
that
throw.
Something?
When there's only one throw and a runner goes all
bizarre.
The way back. Now here's the scene is I think it's first and third and there's a ground ball back to the pitcher Toshiya Sugiuchi and he runs Saburo Omura of the Lotte Marines back toward third. He throws the ball to Shuichi Murata, the third baseman. And at that point, Abe Shinosuke and Jose, who was getting, Jose Lopez, our interviewee this show, neither one of them were covering home plate. So when Murata gets the ball and starts running Saburo Omura back toward home plate, Omura realizes that no one is there, so he just turns on the burners and outruns Murata back to home plate and scores.
I missed that one. I thought you were referencing another botched rundown I saw this week.
Yeah. So, there was another one, that I did see, and I don't even remember. Like I said, this thing, I've never seen a rundown this poorly performed by professionals. I've seen it in Little League. I've seen it in high school. Not on the professional level. Not even in single A. I've been to a couple double A games, single A games. Never. So,
the one I saw the other day was also, was a runner was caught off base. A runner was first, runners first and second, and the runner at second base is, runner on second, and he's caught between second and third. And the throw goes to the third baseman, or maybe the ball was fielded by the third baseman, I don't recall. But anyway, he's got the ball, and he can't decide whether to look the runner back to second or throw to first. It is, okay, it's a ground ball to third base. And he can't decide whether to look the runner back to second because he doesn't look like he wants to go back to second. And by the time he decides he's got to focus on the runner, there's no play at first base. And so now, having concluded that there's no play at first base, he starts to think, now we better get the runner. And he starts to look him back to second. He's going to throw to the second baseman who is out of position. And by the time he makes the throw, there's no chance to get the runner to go back to second. So they're both safe. It's just make up your mind.
But
that's, one of the things, I don't want to be too critical about that because, the difference between a superb fielder and a really lousy fielder is often more than, more than physical skills. But sometimes it's just the fact that the best fielders, I think without question, are the guys who are the best at making these really difficult judgments in a very short period of time.
And they're normally really good. And part of this issue was the pitcher got involved with this rundown. Normally, I've heard coaches say, hey, look, if you're the pitcher, give the ball to a fielder and get out of the way. And the first thing you do as the pitcher is go back to the cover home plate.
Yeah,
so,
back up.
So get rid of the ball and then go and back up at home.
Yep.
And Sugiuchi decided, which was the right play, to run, force the runner to go back to third base, which was right. And he threw the ball a little bit early, which was still okay.
Right.
But the problem was since he threw it a little early, Abe was out of position to get back to home plate, and Jose Lopez didn't run over from first base to cover. And so there was, it ended up being nobody at home base, and it was just unfortunate and weird.
Wow.
And wild. And it, like I said, I've seen some really crazy plays, including Glenn Bragg's at Nagoya Stadium. And I don't know who the pitcher was, but Glenn was playing for the Yokohama in this time.
It was
the early 90s, so it was Tyo Wales, I guess, maybe. And he was hit by a pitch, and he was thrown out of the game, and he went back into the dugout and then into the locker room. And then when everything settled down, the pitcher was about to start throwing again. Here comes Glenn Bragg's running back on the field, chasing the pitcher. And they tackle him, and they get him hauled off the field again. And the pitcher again is set up and ready to throw. And here comes Glenn Bragg's again, two or three times out of the dugout. That was really weird. That was surreal when I was watching that. Like, this guy, I mean, can we tie him down somewhere?
Yeah, I think to be really silly, there has to be a sort of a factor of, like, I'm not giving up on this bad idea.
Right.
So with that in mind, I have to think back to the 2006 WBC in the semifinal round. And Sadaharu Oh, not surprisingly, had decided that the way to win the WBC was to play Japanese-style ball, which meant bunt whenever one run might conceivably do you some good. In other words, anytime the score is close, leading by a run, down by two, whenever, we're going to try to get a sacrifice, regardless. And here's the thing, regardless of who's batting. So everybody was bunting, including Hitoshi Tamura, who I checked, and I asked him about it the following day. He had, I think at that point in his professional career, two career sacrifices. And I asked him, you know, he was saying, I never sacrificed before. I said, no, you've got, look, and you must have forgotten. He says, I was trying to bunt for a base hit.
Mm.
And I got a sacrifice because I failed to get a base hit.
Consolation prize.
He says, I have never had a successful sacrifice attempt in my professional career. We're talking about this point, 8 or 9 years.
Mm.
And he had failed at least once, and I'm going to say he might have failed twice in the WBC before Oh, in the semifinal, said, you know, here's the leadoff run on. Here's Tamura, the guy who's shown more pop than anybody on the Japanese team so far. And nothing, nothing game. And here comes the sacrifice bunt. Okay. And here's the moral of the story is Tamura got the bunt down. He bunted it so badly. He bunted it sharply in front of home plate. The only redeeming factor was that he hit home plate.
Mm.
And the ball bounced high enough that the runner could be safe at second. And that was his first career sacrifice bunt. So it's like, why do it? Why do it? Why do it? And then be surprised when it failed.
A lot of crazy plays out there. A lot of crazy strategy. I can't remember all of them, but there are lots. I'll try to document some and look up some other ones. But thank you very much for the question, Claudio. Great to hear from you again.
So if you other listeners have any other questions about things you've seen or heard about, feel free. In fact, we encourage you, we implore you, we beg you. Okay, no begging. But please send your questions to us, preferably with an MP3, so we can hear your voices on the air.
Yeah, do it and send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we'll address it on the show.
We will indeed. We'll address it. We'll do all kinds of things with it.
All right. All right. Have a good week, man. Thanks a lot. Good job.
Hey, thanks a lot, bud.
All right. We'll see you next week. Enjoy your baseball.